Okay, thanks everyone for being here. We're beginning a new multi-part series entitled Breasts, Signatory of the Mother of All Living, Nourishing Spiritually, Ruling Coitally. And the appropriate verse, I feel, accompanies it, and it's from Proverbs 5, verse 19. Let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe. Let her breasts satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. This section aims to demonstrate that the female breast, directly in synchronization with her heart and mind, while highly attuned to her surroundings, are the source of her emotional passion, guiding every one of her actions, many of which, while in Babylon, are used masterfully to accomplish her sensually sentimental objectives, overwhelmingly negatively. Hidden in plain sight, their positive applications will become blazingly crystal clear in the final study of the Song of Solomon. This study of women's breasts is a central, fundamentally vital theme since Eden, extending into the first resurrection. Accordingly, we shall study that the breasts of the bride irrepressibly represent multiple spiritual meanings, encompassing her entire ensemble from head to toe, in contrast to the man's pudenda, which mostly symbolize a singular, overwhelming meaning of authority, headship, and spiritual intimacy, representative of Christ with his bride. Hebrews 13, verse 17, be persuaded by your elders, and for this cause, by a righteous husband without a wife's groaning. I use the word groaning because it reflects Israel coming out of the wilderness, groaned the whole way with Christ, her husband. And be deferring to them, for they are vigilant for the sake of your souls, as having to render an account that they may be doing this with joy and not with groaning. For this is disadvantageous for you. That's from the CLV version. Job 24, 12 and 13. Men groan from out of the city, and the soul of the wounded crieth out, yet God layeth not folly to them. It's most comforting. And verse 13, they are those that rebel against the light. They know not the ways thereof, nor abide in the paths thereof. For physical marital unity to thrive as intended by God's design, a wife must be fully persuaded to honour and respect her husband's authority in accordance with Christ's spiritual guidance without groaning. This harmony vastly amplifies her husband's ravishment and love, hugely enabling her to entrust him fully with her mind and body, which is symbolised by her breasts, her heart's disposition towards him coitally in a spiritual context. We are steadily unravelling these complexities before the Song of Solomon study itself. It is hoped that we will continue to see that those inherent female traits emanating from her breasts, having been artfully used in Babylon, were initially intended and rarely experienced for their righteous purpose, to glorify God. The wives of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, including Esther, Ruth and even a reformed Rahab, all knew their glorious God-given feminine powers were designed to help their husbands eagerly go forth each day to provide for them and their family, meeting every need, unified emotionally, fulfilling every craving they righteously lusted, all represented in and by their breasts' profound meanings. In 2026, the world has far removed itself from God's word that those methodologies initially designed by God to amplify husbands and wives' marital joy unitedly are seen by most women as a highly retrograde step, undoing all that the suffragette movement has feverishly worked for 100 years to accomplish. The following verses, indicative of most unmarried young women, are too terrible for them to submit, other than to furiously, as the saying goes, spits chips, meaning speak angrily. 1 Timothy 5 verse 11 to 15. But the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wax wanton, meaning impulse of sexual desire, live voluptuously, luxuriously, against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they have cast off their first faith. And withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers, also and busybody, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some are already turned aside after Satan. Of course, those verses speak to the elect of God as having gone carousing for doctrines, amplifying the fleshy desires, classically Orthodox, Babylonian Christian, bringing forth spiritual children of the evil one inwardly. And if they see as brightly as a Shulamite bride, she devotes her breasts calmly, her heart wholeheartedly. Her passions are guided to bear spiritual fruit from her husband through her instigation of kissing him, as seen in Song of Solomon 1 verse 2. That foremost act of building her house in her husband inherently prepares her heart, mind and body in the constant semi-dormant state of arousal that she, unlike her carnal husband, can sustain for very lengthy periods. Distinctively, a prudent wife's beautiful mindset, always ready in an instant to be inflamed physically and spiritually, characteristically Christ. To a chaotic Babylonian feminist, an enslavement paradoxically highlighting her external enslavement, her lamp having gone out, destroying the joy she craves. Exodus 27 verse 20, and thou shalt command the children of Israel that they bring thee pure oil, olive oil, beaten for the light, to cause a lamp to burn always. Matthew 25 verse 6 to 8, and at midnight there was a cry made, behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. And all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said unto the wise, give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out. Later in this introductory series, we hope to demonstrate that, when deeply considered, the opening statement is particularly for the wife, aiming for the remarkably constant state of a ravished mind for her husband, typified by the bride's like state of mind for Christ. Because of Eve's curse, with women and wives semi-consciously always ruling their menfolk, and wives their husbands, sexually, they set themselves up to be disassociated towards their husbands, correspondingly and unconsciously, coitally. Accordingly, wives are rarely in a Shulamite, Abishag-like state of readiness, for which all men... Sorry for that interruption. Because of Eve's curse, with women and wives semi-consciously always ruling the menfolk and wives the husband sexually, they set themselves up to be disassociated towards their husbands, correspondingly and unconsciously, coitally. Accordingly, wives are rarely in a Shulamite, Abishag-like state of readiness, for which all women are created to employ their most potent administrative power, glorifying God in their minds and bodies, and for a rare few, as does the bride, spiritually. 1 Corinthians 6:20. For ye are bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. Intentionally designed, the female figure... Intentionally designed, the female figure, even to women, is a complex thing of exquisite beauty, wonderfully made, awakening many different arousals in both genders, but inherently in men, immediately involuntary sexual interest, often just as quickly forlornly lost, and usually to their destruction. For young, beautiful women, their breasts signify everlasting physiological discomfort and frustration from unwanted attention, as well as from not receiving enough from the few potential suitors who matter. Genesis 49 verse 25, even by the God of thy father who shall help thee, and by the Almighty who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breasts and of the womb. And the meaning of breasts from Hebrews 76:99, meaning to turn, strangely to destroy, spoil or devastate, from Strong's, properly to swell up, by implications of insolence, to devastate, meaning to waste. Isaiah 64, verse 10 and 11. The holy cities are a wilderness. Zion is a wilderness. Jerusalem, a desolation. Our holy and our beautiful house, where our fathers praised thee, is burned up with fire, and all our present things are laid waste. Socio-economic factors, agreeable personality traits, and other genetic factors significantly influence attractiveness in both genders, making potential mates accessible to everyone. Especially from a male perspective, on female beauty, the classically desirable female body ratio is highly variable, with different male tastes impacting perceptions, equaling the scale of righteous and unrighteous lust. Nonetheless, there are specific classic bodily proportions, conspicuously and gloriously feminine, that are instantly recognizable and circumstantially arousing to males, and oftentimes envied by women, particularly when coupled with an Esther-like warm and gracious personality. Her entire form, captivatingly offering vain hope, devastating the majority of males ill-prepared for marriage ruled by their privy. Breasts righteously in marriage and adulterously are, after kisses, often the first port of call to either amplify latent devastation, as Solomon suggestively experienced in Ecclesiastes 7:26, or as his Shulamite bride incites, the glorious incitation of rapturous connectivity. Their multi-role righteous engagements are vastly more often, not fixatedly and incessantly, fatigued, as were Aholas and Holobars, the two girls' infamous escapades to their future horror, initiating devastating in their humiliation in the resurrection of judgment. Relatively short-lived pain, as will all people therein realize that it is God who directed those events for the bride's well-granted like humiliation that Ahola and Aholibah represented her. Ezekiel 23:2-4. Son of man, there were two women, the daughters of one mother, and they committed whoredoms in Egypt. They committed whoredoms in their youth. There their breasts were pressed, and they bruised their teats. And there they bruised their teats of their virginity. And the names of them were Ahola the elder, and Aholibah her sister. And they were mine, and they bare sons and daughters. Thus were their names: Samaria is Ahola, and Jerusalem the younger, Aholibah. While twin fawn breasts, as depicted in Song of Solomon 4 verse 5, on women are fetchingly distinctively female, it's her every feminine feature, when fashioned in virtuous Abishag-like proportions, that causes men and women to markedly note her inner beauty. The Lord specifically designed women's fabulously sensory bodies to have a more profound influence on their minds, making them, for better or worse, capriciously sensitive instruments. Those mostly gloriously displayed sensitivities are strongly felt, first emanating from her breasts, which are poetically seen as her heart and the seat of emotions, in concert felt in her belly, directing her mind to action, sometimes impetuously, cutely, disconcertingly, yet delightfully bewitching. When Eve's eyes lit upon the forbidden fruit, she saw, with emphasis on the saw, that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise. She took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. That's in Genesis 3, verse 6. Jeremiah 17, verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things, and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Unrestrained, benign or evil thoughts, chiefly triggered by visual and tactile stimuli, provoke raptures in both men and women. When deliberately or unconsciously prolonged, they can involuntarily provoke genital responses. Correspondingly, a single feature of a woman, her breasts, and more specifically the nipple, clichéd by Ahola and Aholibah, fatigue, along with its counterpart and simultaneously its arch nemesis, the male privy. Now, I've got in brackets here for women and specifically wives, a constant symbol of antagonistic authority, is subsequently where each gender's physically induced emotional stimuli are privately sensed. For both genders, more prominently males, particularly young men, even the most innocuous, ridiculously non-sexual stimuli can unexpectedly, intriguingly, and often personally annoyingly spark provocation. It's noting, to the curious and virtuous delight of the graciously observant and well-grounded opposite sex, discreetly, inwardly glorify the Lord for their bodies, how their bodies are wonderfully made, as he too spiritually delights in his ravishment for us, his bride's spiritual arousal in her signified breasts, her heart. Those highly erotic ravishments dedicated to a spouse are what the Shulamite bride in the Song of Solomon twice vigorously protects in herself, of course, as opposed to her Babylonian sisters. And her beloved, she says, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, that ye stir not up nor awake my love until he please. That's in Song of Solomon 3 verse 5 and 8 verse 4. Of course, and in courtship, they both are exceptionally pleased for their mutual sensual awakenings, an overwhelming theme in the Song of Solomon, incredibly amplified the moment her husband pleases. It all beginning with cunningly placed kisses, she envisions barely containing amorous advancement of a burning goal of his progression to her breasts in righteous triumph. And of course, we remember that righteous triumph is correlating to Strong's meaning of breasts, meaning to swell up, which also means destroying, and his resistance most delightfully. The breast of both man and beast in both genders is an outward display of their power and authority, directly correlating to God's sovereign power and authority. A male ox or workhorse, mighty power is in their loins, with the weight of that pulling power harnessed in human form from its chest, effectively their brisket and forward shoulders. Accordingly, that is where Aaron's breastplate and ephod was positioned, over his heart, the center of his emotions and significant, and signify the spirit of his Lord's resting place. Exodus 28, verse 1 to 4. And take thou unto thee Aaron, thy brother, and his sons with him, and from among the children of Israel, that he may minister unto me in the priest office, even Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and Eleazar, and Ithamar, and Aaron, or Aaron's sons. And thou shalt make holy garments for Aaron, thy brother, for glory and for beauty. And thou shalt speak unto all that are wise-hearted, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office. And these are the garments which they shall make: breastplate and ephod, and a robe, and a embroidered coat, a mitre, and a girdle. And they shall make holy garments for Aaron, thy brother, and his sons, that they may minister unto me in the priest's office. Of course, all of that ministration is highly indicative too of a wife for a husband, and of course for him for her. Exodus 29, 26 to 30. And thou shalt take the breast of the ram of Aaron's consecration and wave it for a wave offering before the Lord, and it shall be thy part. And thou shalt sanctify the breast of the wave offering and the shoulder of the heave offering, which is heaved up of the ram of the consecration, even that which is for Aaron and of that which is for his sons. And it shall be Aaron and his sons as a statute for ever from the children of Israel, for it is an heave offering. It shall be an heave offering from the children of Israel of the sacrifice of their peace offerings, even their heave offering unto the Lord. And the holy garments of Aaron shall be his sons after him, to be anointed therein and to be consecrated in them. And that son that is priest in his stead shall put them on 7 days when he cometh unto the tabernacle of the congregation to minister in the holy place. I have a note here: the breast is signatory to a wife, as did Abishag to David and all the holy women of old, ministering to their husbands initially from their breasts, both physically and spiritually. or particularly us spiritually. Leviticus 7:30 to 32. His own hands shall bring the offerings of the Lord, made by fire, the fat of the breast. It shall he bring, that the breast may be waved for a wave offering before the Lord. And the priest shall burn the fat upon the altar, but the breast shall be Aaron's and his sons. And the right shoulder shall he give unto the priest for an heave offering of the sacrifices of your peace offerings. Felt in the heart, male and female breasts, thus evoke righteous and unrighteous emotional ruin or devastation following swelling pride in one's heart. By implication, a sensualized breast. Proverbs 16, verse 18. Pride, meaning exaltation, majesty, proud swelling. Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Even though a husband can be euphemistically, gloriously devastated by his wife's Shulamite-like spirit of desire for his devotion, the most poignant usage of the term breasts, negative application, which has ruined many a young man, and her even destroyed marriages. Isaiah 2 verse 2, plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, neither am I her husband. Let her therefore put away her whoredoms out of her sight, and her adulteries from between her breasts, meaning the centre of her heart. Hence the breast location in Beasts, as seen in Kings, and, well, Isaiah 60 verse 16, and most effectively in women, denotes their underlying power and authority. Since being cast out of Eden, Adam's wounded privy and stones directly result in Eve's and all women being wounded in their breasts. Henceforth, and to feel secure, even though falsely, she feels compelled to fill the gaping hole in her emotions beneath her breasts by seizing control where Adam has miserably failed, forcing him to fulfill her endless sentiments should he fall short of receiving carefully meted boudoir intimacies. Now she rides the beast of mankind, a veritable Cutty Sark figurehead. For those who don't know, ironically, it was a witch, a practitioner of doctrinal sorcery for us, leading mankind by his wounded privy through the turbulent seas of nations in lust for money, business and power on all levels. And of course, historically, the legend of the Cutty Sark ship and its namesake figurehead, from which it derives its name, and the ship epitomizes the pinnacle of sail before steam. In a fascinating Google study, you look it up, it is fascinating. Here is a fantastically designed Cutty Sark figurehead in the link below. I won't reveal it, but you can see it in your own time. And of course, note, none of us can deride what God has given us physically, and sometimes perceived as brutal since birth, yet note the Cutty Sark, her no doubt God-inspired masculine facial features. A strident look on her face, determined to grasp the horse's tail. You'll understand that more effectively by, in your own time, looking up the meaning of the Cutty Sark and its fascinating story in the late 19th century. It is nearly impossible to embrace in greeting either male or female without direct contact with their breast. Many virtuous or unethical questions can arise in either recipient from a male and female embosomed by the millisecond, somewhat alarmingly prolonged or even short-lived. Since the Bible is predominantly and enigmatically about a young woman becoming a new Adam, it is her breasts that attract everyone's equally lewd attention in Babylon before being elegantly clothed, hidden in the brush like twin thorns waiting for one man, her husband's attention. Her sanctified breasts and her shoulders, representative of her heart, are a type of heave offering, waved emblematically, not in lewd physical sense, to her husband to respond in response to him choosing her as his offering. They are in type waved, meaning nonetheless unavoidable sweet savour, an unavoidable sweet savour to his gaze for him to note her virtuous heart and loins presentations, their walk in righteousness, as the horn of her power not used nefariously as in Babylon, but for his joy and delight in her elation. The meaning of heave from the heave offering, Hebrews 73:11, to rise up, be high, be lofty, be exalted, set on high. to raise or rear in children, cause to grow up, to be lifted up, contribute, magnify oneself, to be rotten, be wormy. And from Strong's representation, haughty, heave up, loud, presumptuously, promote, set up tall, breed worms, interestingly. It is a totally horrific imagery of a woman's beautiful breasts breeding worms, yet cows with mastitis, if left untreated, can become infected and attract blowflies that lay eggs and breed worms. It is somewhat synonymous with an old covenant woman lying about an adulterous act and made to drink the embittering water of affliction, causing her thighs and her belly, her Privian belly, being the centre of adultery, to rot. Breasts in Hebrew 23:73, the breast means, as most seen in front, typically breasts. The Hebrew term employed for breast is quite direct, as it signifies as most seen in the front. Here is the root of breasts. In Hebrew, of course, note, of great note are the terms to gaze at, contemplate, it's got in brackets with pleasure, prophesy, to see as a seer in the ecstatic state, to see by experience. Hebrews 23:72. For breasts, a primitive root to gaze, mentally to perceive, contemplate with pleasure. So we see that a woman's breasts hold phenomenal meaning and symbolism, as we will progressively explore, culminating in the Song of Solomon, their unavoidable positioning on mankind compared to most beasts of the field is on his chest, and their incitements are unashamedly and directly associated with her husband's kisses. Song of Solomon 1 verse 2, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. Women and men, or women want men, and of course women, to notice their breasts, unrighteously presented, devastating society. That's just a heading for the next session. A woman's glory of her hair, amplifying her facial comeliness and instantly recognizable shape for the attentive male's eye, is her breasts that never fatigue in this insatiable attention of men, as is the overworked narrative of Aholibah's mischief centered on their breasts. This fact is exploited by most women as a seemingly innocuous right to present themselves authentically and comfortably, thereby unmistakably attracting attention. Thereby in Babylon, breasts are considered by men and women to be a free-for-all exploitation. The suffragettes in the mid-1960s and early 70s hyped their attention by the adage, burn the bra. And it's a woman's right to go braless, even topless, all the while snarling outrage for the attention the beautiful breast wildly attracts. Hence, and soundly degrading the honorable usage by God's terminology before the foundation of the world as engendering devastation. New heading, one body part. Two opposite meanings complementing spiritually. We're about to explore further a subtle yet deeply significant truth, how the same body part, the female breast, highlighted by the inseparable nipple, the driving force and initiating seat of physical, representable, spiritual desire, separating the bride from her sisters in Babylon, can hold two entirely different meanings depending on the context. One moment, breasts outwardly represent nurturing, comfort, and emotional closeness. The next, they are a source of erotic desire, attraction, and taboo. Those two meanings, intimacy and eroticism, aren't conflicting, but gloriously complement each other. Understanding how they influence our emotional, physical, and psychological experiences is essential for espoused healing, connection, and self-awareness, which enables a wife to build a house physically and spiritually for her carnal husband and Christ by his design. Now for the final verses in this first part of the series, Isaiah 66 verse 1. Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that ye build unto me? And where is the place of my rest? John 12, 13, verse 23. There was at table one of his disciples, the one dear to Jesus, resting his head on Jesus' breast. Solomon 1, verse 13. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. He shall lie all night betwixt my breasts. Meaning in her heart, her flame never goes out. Proverbs 14, verse 1. A wise woman makes her home what it should be, but the home of a foolish woman is destroyed by her own actions. And of course, those verses will become clearer as we progress through this multi-series part on breasts. And thanks, everyone, for being here for this first part.